This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
Mystery is my hobby. Today's story took place one cold day last November. I received a phone call for an appointment from a young lady up in the Tupper Lake region of the state. 2 days later, she called on me at my apartment. Yes?
Are you Barton Gray?
Yes, I am. Won't you come in, please?
Thank you. My name is Ellen Wade.
Yes, I know. I've been expecting you. Sit down, please. Cigarette?
No, thank you.
Miss Wade, since talking to you on the telephone, I have taken the trouble to inquire into the circumstances of your brother's arrest.
And you concluded he's guilty of murdering Rose Clinton, and you don't feel that you can help me. Is that it, Mr. Gates?
Unless some new evidence has turned up, Miss Wade.
Some new evidence has turned up, Mr. Gates.
Oh? Then why haven't you gone to the authorities with it?
For the same reason, Mr. Gates, that you don't go to the authorities if you uncover a new piece of evidence when working on a case.
I see.
They've already decided that my brother is guilty of murder. All the evidence is against him.
Yes, I know.
There isn't much time left, Mr. Gates. If I went to the authorities with my evidence, I'm sure they'd laugh at me.
But you think that I will give it serious consideration?
I think this. You have a reputation for honesty, Mr. Drake. Most of the cases you've worked on have had, shall we say, an unusual twist.
Yes, that's quite true.
I've admired your work greatly. You're a clever man, Mr. Drake.
You flatter me.
No, please. My purpose is not to buy your services with flattery. Here. There are $2,000 in this roll of bills.
Well?
It's all I have. I believe my brother is innocent of murdering Rose Clinton. The money is yours if you'll listen to my story.
Listen to your story, but I thought...
I must tell you about Peter, Mr. Drake, before I show you my evidence. I wouldn't ask even you to believe that what I've discovered is important until you first heard the true facts of Peter's love for Rose Clinton.
Then your brother did love this girl, hmm?
He believed he did. Peter's a country boy. We'd always lived in hospital.
Yes, I know. Your parents are both dead. Those facts were mentioned in the newspapers out of case.
That's right. Peter and I were getting along fine, and then Rose Clinton came to town. She'd been ordered into a drier climate because of sinus trouble.
Mm-hmm.
She came from New York. To Peter, she represented all the glitter and glamour of a way of living that he'd always dreamed. Hello, Peter.
Ellen, why aren't you in bed? It's almost 1 o'clock.
I waited up for you, Peter. I want to talk to you.
Oh, skip, but I don't want
to Peter,
talk.
Peter, listen to me. George Magnus is here tonight.
Magnus? What did he want?
Just what you think, Peter. Either you stop seeing Rose Clinton, Mr. Magnus will withdraw his offer to take you into the bank.
Well, so that's it. Just because he offered me a job, he thinks he owns me. He thinks he can tell me how to live my own life, huh? Well, he can't. He can take his bank
then
and...
stop it. Mr. Magnus is right. He was kind enough to offer you an opportunity to make something of yourself. The least you can do is give some consideration to his reputation.
His reputation? What the devil has Jules Magnus' reputation got to do with me being in love with Rose?
Love? Oh, Peter, be reasonable. How can you mistake a boy's infatuation for something as deep and sincere and honest as love?
Ellen, if you weren't my sister,
But I am your sister, Peter. I'm older and more experienced. I feel responsible.
Oh, nuts.
Peter, listen to me. Rose Clinton is bad. This small country town bores. She's found a way to amuse herself by encouraging you and others to...
Others? Well, what do you mean by that,
Peter,
crack?
Peter, are you so blind that you don't realize you're only one of many who go to see Rose Clinton?
That's a lie.
It isn't, Peter. It's the truth. Everyone in town but you knows. They're laughing at you behind your back.
I don't believe it. It can't be true. Rose is good and loyal and honest. She wouldn't betray my love.
Oh, you poor dear fool, Peter. You're so honest yourself, you can't believe anyone else can be otherwise.
Rose wouldn't do that to me. She wouldn't.
You're whistling in the dark, Peter. Deep down, you know that it's true. I don't want to hurt you, Peter. Believe me, I'm telling you this for your own good.
My own good? You think I was a child. Ellen, I don't know what's behind all this, but if you think I'm going to give Rose up, you're crazy. Rose and I are going to be married.
Married?
Yeah, she promised me tonight. Getting out of this stinking town and its small-minded people forever.
Peter, I'm sorry.
I'll forget it. I'm not blaming you.
I mean, Peter, that I'm sorry I have to tell you. I hoped it wouldn't be necessary.
Tell me what?
Jeff Bullard was at Rose Clinton's last night.
Oh, Ellen, for gosh sakes, quit trying to dream up wild stories in order to make...
I saw him, Peter. I saw him with my own eyes. And the night before, my Tanner was there.
Ellen, if I thought you were lying to me,
I'm not lying. I'm your sister, Peter. You're all I have in the world. Do you think I'd lie to you? Peter, what are you doing?
What does it look like?
Peter, no! Put that gun back! Peter, help me!
Take your hands off me! I'm going to settle this thing right now, tonight!
Not that way, Peter! Killing won't settle anything! Peter, you fool! You fool! Oh, Peter!
I didn't dream that Peter would lose his head, Mr. Drake. He was never an impetuous youth. I tried to follow him, but we only had one car. He'd taken it.
I see. And the next morning they found Rose Quinton dead, shot through the head with a .32 caliber pistol.
Yes.
What caliber was your brother's gun, Miss Wayne?
It was a .32. But they never found it. Peter had dropped it somewhere.
Dropped it?
Yes. He didn't go to Rose Quinton's that night, Mr. Drake.
Uh-huh.
Long before he reached her house, he realized what a fool he was. He changed his mind about wanting to kill.
Where did he go? As I remember the case, he was picked up the next morning in the woods, several miles from Hartville.
Peter doesn't remember where he was or what he did. He left the car and spent the night wandering aimlessly through the woods.
Oh, I see.
Why, no. Everything points to Peter's guilt. I have only his word against the evidence. I believe my brother, Mr. Drake. That's why I brought you this.
Oh? Is this your evidence, this picture?
Yes. On the night Rose Quinton was murdered, we had a thaw in Hartville. The next morning, the temperature dropped. The ground was frozen solid.
I see. So you found a footprint in the frozen ground and took this picture of him?
Yes.
Seems to be just an ordinary picture of a footprint.
Except for the fact that the man who made it wore hobnails in his boots.
I see he did. I suppose now you're going to say that your brother owned no boots with hobnails.
No, he didn't, but that's unimportant. Look closely at the picture, Mr. Drake.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to influence you. You must see for yourself.
See what?
Turn the picture sideways. Study the design of the hobnail. Do you see anything unusual?
Turn the picture sideways, isn't it? By Jove.
Do you see it?
See it. It's as plain as day. Miss Wade, I should be delighted to take your case.
Now, wait a minute, Bart. I read all about the Wade case. The police did a good job.
I read all about it, too, Inspector, and I agree with you 100%.
Well, then?
Well, then, I'm going to prove that the authorities were 100% wrong, Inspector.
You are, eh?
I am.
Well, count me out. I'm not sticking my chin out on anything as dead open and shut as that.
Very well, Inspector. By the way, here's a picture I'd like you to have a look at.
Huh? A picture?
Uh-huh.
What's it a picture of?
What does it look like?
Look like? It's a picture of a footprint. The guy had hobnails in his boots.
Exactly. These boots were worn by the murderer of Rose Quinton.
Is that a fact?
Yes. Turn the picture sideways, Inspector. Look closely. What do you see?
What do I see? Well, doggone it, I see the same thing I saw before. Jumping Judas.
Well, Inspector.
Bart, where'd you get this?
A very lovely young lady gave it to me.
A very lovely young... I'll bet. Well, what are you going to do about it?
I've already told you what I'm going to do
about it. Yeah? So you did. Huh. Let me see that picture again, Bart.
Of course, is it?
Huh. Bart.
Yes, Inspector.
Oh, get that smug grin off your face and make two reservations for Hartville.
You see, Mr. Magnus, Ellen Wade mentioned that her brother was going to work in your bank, and we thought possibly you could help us.
Mr. Drake, I know you'll pardon my frankness.
Of course.
Believe me when I say I've always admired your work. Your reputation is to be envied.
How about me? I figured in some of Drake's deals.
I know you did, Inspector Danton. I admire you, too. Believe me, I do.
Well, now...
What you're trying to say, Mr. Magnus, is that in your opinion, there's little hope of proving Peter Wade innocent of the murder of Rose Quinton. Hmm?
You embarrass me, Mr. Drake. Ellen's and Peter's father was my dear friend. Yet under the circumstances...
Show him the picture, Bart.
Yes. Mr. Magnus, this is a picture of a footprint taken by Ellen Wade on the morning after Rose Quinton's murder. Will you examine it closely, please?
Ellen always was a fairly good amateur photographer. Say...
See it, do you, Mr. Magnus?
Oh, I should say I do. Gentlemen, this throws an entirely different light on the matter.
Yes, we thought it did too, Mr. Magnus. Tell me, how many cobblers are in this town?
Your problem there is simple. There's only one. His name is Ethan Lance. He lives... Good Lord.
Yes, Mr. Magnus?
Ethan Lance lives next door to the house where Rose Quinton lives.
Now we're getting somewhere. If the cobbler lived next door, then he knew what...
Here are the statements, Mr. Magnus. Oh, I didn't know you were busy.
Come in, Jeff. I want you to meet these two gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
This is Barton Drake, the criminologist, and Inspector Danton, his co-worker.
Aye.
Gentlemen, this is Jeff Bullock.
How do you do?
Jeff Bullard, say his name.
Hello, Jeff. Nice to know you.
Jeff's our newest employee. He took the job that I had in mind for Peter Wade.
Uh-huh.
Yes, Mr. Drake and Inspector Danton are investigating the murder of Rose Quinton.
I thought the case was solved several weeks ago.
It was, yes. But it seems that some new evidence has been uncovered. Tell me, my boy, your favorite sport is hunting, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Why?
Nothing. I was just wondering. You may go.
Yes, sir. Now, his favorite sport is hunting, eh?
Just a moment, please. Let's not jump to conclusions. I'm afraid I was wrong in asking Jeff that question in front of you gentlemen.
Why do you say that, Mr. Magnus?
Jeff's a good boy. I couldn't ask for better. It's unfair to suspect it.
Unfair? Look, Mr. Magnus, there's been a murder and the wrong party's going to pay for it. That's kind of unfair, too.
Yes, I suppose you're right. I hadn't looked at it that way. Well, gentlemen, it seems to me that your task is comparatively simple. Our cobbler friend Ethan Lance holds the answer to your mystery.
Yes, we'd better have a talk with Ethan Lance at once. How far is it out this place, Mr. Magnus?
About 5 miles. Suppose you two gentlemen come home and have dinner with me. Then I'll drive you out to Ethan's place. We can stop and pick up Ellen and Mike on the way.
Mike?
Mike Tanner. Something wrong?
I'm not sure. Mike Tanner was one of the two people that Alan Wade went mentioned whom we might consider as suspects.
Did?
Mm-hmm.
What? That's odd.
What's odd about it?
Mike Tanner and Ellen Wade were engaged to be married. Ceremony scheduled for next week.
Look, Bob, I think you're a nice guy and all that. I'm willing to play along with you, but...
But you don't like the idea of passing up a good dinner for a ride in the country, eh, Inspector?
Oh, it isn't a dinner. I'm like a camel. I can go for days without eating.
You mean drinking, Inspector?
Oh, drinking either. I'm a very rugged fellow.
Well, then what is your particular complaint, Inspector?
It's the principle of the thing, Bob. When a gentleman asks me to dinner, I at least like to be polite.
But instead of that, we ignore his invitation, borrow his car, refuse his company, and set off by ourselves.
Yeah. Now, do you call that good manner?
No, I call it a pleasure.
Well,
manner,
then.
There are times, Inspector, when it's smart enough to consider one's manners or stomach. This must be the place.
What place? Oh, the cobbler's. I forgot where we were going. Hey, there's the cobbler. What are you running away for?
He isn't the cobbler, Inspector. That's Mike Tanner. Come on.
We're going to try and catch him?
Definitely not. We have more important things to do.
What, for example?
Examining the corpse of Ethan Lance, for example.
Examining the corpse, for God's sake, Bob.
We are. There's no point in knocking. Our cobbler friend is dead, Inspector. Open the door.
Okay. I won't ask any questions. Just do as I'm told.
He isn't in this room, is he, Inspector?
Nope.
Well, let's try the kitchen.
Okay, let me open the door. That's my job.
There we are, Inspector.
There we are, he says, pointing casually at the corpse. Do you have to be so cold-blooded about it?
Sorry, Inspector. I was thinking of young Peter Wade, who was scheduled to die for a crime he didn't commit.
You're sure Wade is innocent, eh?
Positively, Inspector.
Yeah. Well, how are you going to prove it now that Ethan Lance is dead?
I can prove it, Inspector. Come on. We're going to report this murder to the local authorities, and then we're going to have a talk with Ellen Wade.
I know why you're here, Mr. Drake. You found out about me and Mike.
I'm not at all interested in your flirtation with Mike Tanner, Miss Wade.
I'll tell you in private I'm capable of carrying on a flirtation with a murderer.
I'm not implying anything, Miss Wade. I merely want
to
ask
you... Why don't you let me explain? Mike and I were engaged before Rose Quinton came to town.
Inspector.
Yeah?
Would you stop saying, uh-huh?
Okay.
Thank you. Miss Wade, it is important that you answer some questions I
and
have to
And it is important
me.
That you understand about my interest in Mike Tanner.
Very well, Miss Wade. You're merely pretending to be in love with Mike Tanner in the hope of getting information from him that will prove your brother innocent. Is that it?
Yes, that's it.
That's what I thought. And how have you made out?
Also,
why didn't you mention your plans to me when you called at my apartment in New York?
Because I...
And why didn't you tell me that you called on Ethan Lance and asked him in whose boots he placed those hobnails?
Who told you that?
Nobody. It merely seemed logical. And I think the reason you neglected to mention those facts to me in New York was because you were afraid I'd refuse to take your case. Is that correct?
Yes, it was. I needed help desperately. I'd have done anything I could
to... I understand, but unfortunately, your desperation has been the cause of another murder.
Another murder?
Yes. Ethan Lance was shot through the head this morning.
Ethan Lance shot?
Unfortunately.
Now, we'll never know who killed Rose Quinton. Ethan was the only one who knew the identity of the real murderer.
Oh, no, lady. Drake knows, don't you, Bud?
As a matter of fact, I do, Inspector.
You do?
Yes, but proving it is another matter. Miss Wade, Have you any idea where your brother went after you left this house on the night that Rose Clinton was murdered?
I've already told you. He doesn't remember himself. He was dead.
Yes, I know. But a man in that condition usually follows a pattern, Miss Wade. The chances are that his wanderings carried him to some place where he'd been before.
Oh, Peter was in the woods all the time. He's sure of that.
Say, I once knew a guy who got lost in the woods. You know how he found his way home?
No, Inspector.
Huh?
Your brother was quite a sportsman, wasn't he, Miss Wade? He must have had a favorite spot where he went to hunt or fish.
Yes, I suppose he did have.
I'll be glad to tell you folks how this guy I know found his way home.
It's important, Miss Wade. You see, if we can find the gun that Peter lost and it hasn't been discharged, that will prove conclusively he didn't shoot Rose Clinton, won't it?
Won't cost you a cent to listen.
I remember now. Peter was always talking about a place called Sunset Hill. It's beautiful there, and there's excellent partridge cover.
Splendid. Come along, Inspector. We're going hunting for a gun.
Okay, so you don't care how the guy found his way home. Okay, all I was trying to do was tell you. But this is the nuttiest deal you ever got us into. How the heck do you think we're ever going to find a gun in this stuff?
Just keep your eagle eyes open, Inspector. We'll find it.
I wish I could feel as sure of myself as you sound. Look, don't you think the local authorities came looking for that gun when Wade told him he dropped it?
I certainly do, Inspector.
Well, then,
what?
If they couldn't find it, how do you expect us to find it?
Ah, they didn't have you to help them, Inspector.
Very funny. Now, look, Bart, I'm getting sick of this. That gun was lost a month ago. It's been looked for. There wasn't a... What do you mean?
Look over there, Inspector.
Huh? Over there.
Not there. There. See it?
Well, I'll be a ruffled grouse. It's a gun.
Not a gun, Inspector. The gun. Pick it up.
Sure. Lying right. They're all shiny and light. Say, Bart.
Yes, Inspector.
This is cockeyed.
Oh?
If we found the gun so easily, how is it...
I told you, Inspector, the others didn't have you along.
There's another thing.
Put the gun in your pocket, Inspector, and let's get back to Ellen Wade.
Just a minute.
Stop asking so many questions, Inspector. Come along.
But, Bart, don't you see?
I see more than you think I see, Inspector. If you must talk, tell me about your lost friend and how he found his way out of the woods. Come along, man. There's the Wade cottage, Inspector.
And there's someone going into it. Say, isn't that Mr. Magnus?
Yes, I think it is, Inspector. And the young man with him is Jeff Bullard.
Well, what do you know? Now, if Mike Tanner would only show up, it'd make things simple, wouldn't it?
Well, Mike Tanner won't be far away, Inspector. Let's hurry along.
Well, gentlemen, I'm glad to see you. I've unearthed a bit of interesting information.
That's right, Mr. Magnus. Miss Wade, you were right about your brother going to Sunset Hill.
You mean that you found
it? No, not I. The inspector found it, Miss Wade. He has very sharp eyes.
Oh, sure. As a boy, they call me Gimlet Eye Danton. Now, look.
Gentlemen, if you don't mind, I think you'll find that what I have to say is important.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Magnus. What is it you want to tell us?
And after you left the bank this afternoon, I got to thinking.
That's the way Bart figures things out, thinking.
Yes, It occurred to me that since Jeff here had been, seeing something of Miss Quinton before her death, he might possibly have been near her home on the night that she was so brutally murdered.
I see. Well, Jeff?
Well, I guess I should have mentioned this before. I did go out to see Rose that night. I didn't go in, though. I heard a shot, and then I saw someone run from the house.
You certainly should have mentioned that before, Jeff. Did you recognize this person who ran from the house?
Yes, sir. That is, I think so.
Well... Tell them who it was, Jeff.
No, Jeff, I wouldn't if I were you. If you mention the name and I can prove that you're lying, you'll be worse off than you are right now, and that, my boy, will be bad.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, Jeff, that you're going to lose your job at the bank anyhow, so you might as well not talk.
Drake, what the devil are you getting at?
A lot of things, my friend. A boy is accused of committing murder. He has a trial which very little evidence is presented, and then suddenly everyone seems to have ideas on the subject. I wonder why.
I'll tell you why. Magnus here owns the town and everybody in it. He's got everybody scared of him. They only talk when he tells them to.
I think you're right, Inspector.
Why, you keep a civil tongue in your head. I'll have you run out of town. I'll have you tried and...
Sit down, sport. Well, won't do anything. That's better. Go ahead, boss.
Thank you, Inspector. Magnus, besides being the most wealthy and influential man in town, I think you must be the most hated. I think that Ethan Lance must have hated you.
What about it?
Probably you held a mortgage on his home or loaned him money to operate his business. Obligating a man is a certain way to make him hate you.
Is that the kind of stuff you write in your books, Drake?
Yes, it is. Ethan Lance lived next door to Rose Clinton. He probably amused himself by watching the progress of her various romances.
I know he did. He used to sit in his window with...
Shut up, Jeff. You didn't want it known that you were calling on Rose Clinton, Magnus, did you? Because of your important position in town.
I calling on her?
Well, it's ridiculous.
ridiculous.
No, 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 it isn't ridiculous. You probably tried to make her promise that she would see no one else, and when she refused, you threatened to kill her.
That's a lie.
Ethan Lance must have been a bit of a philosopher. He knew the type of person Rose Quinton was. He knew that she'd do as she pleased. Lance guessed that one of the men who was going to the girl's house would kill her, and he had his own way of picking the winner.
I suppose now you're going to tell me that that stupid picture of the footprint that Ellen took was made by my boots.
Yes, 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 I am. You brought the boots to Ethan Lantis to be resold, Magnus. They were hunting boots, and you ordered hobnails. The cobbler, being a whimsical sort of chap, cleverly designed the word guilty in the sole of one boot when he inserted the nail.
Yes, old man Lance thought he was pretty cute. Well, he can't prove who owned the boots.
But I can, Mr. Magnus.
I don't believe it.
Very well. Lance saw you murder Rose Quinton. He was afraid to do anything about it because of what you might do to him. So he kept quiet, hoping that someone would discover the footprint. He didn't even dare speak when Peter Wade was arrested.
And so?
Oh, I realize you've had ample time to destroy your boots, Magnus. That's why I worked on another theory. That's why we hunted for and found the gun with which Peter Wade was supposed to have shot Rose Quinton.
But it's impossible. We looked for that gun.
But you didn't have Inspector Danton's eagle eyes to help you. Show him the gun, Inspector.
Sure, here it is, Sport. No bullets discharged, and a fingerprint test will prove who owned it.
Exactly, and Ethan Lance's testimony given to us this morning before we saw you, Magnus, will prove that you...
Inspector, I see him all right, Sport.
Keep away from me, Danton.
Why, you...
What's my dad? What are you doing?
Nice work, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, son.
I've been wanting to hit that rat for years.
Mr. Drake, I don't know how to thank you for what you've done for me. And Peter.
Oh, there's lots of ways, lady.
That will be enough, Inspector.
Pardon me. And look, lady, ask him how he happened to find your brother's gun so easily.
I did wonder about that, Mr. Drake.
Yes, so did I. The thing is, here's a gun all shining and bright, lying out there in the woods, staring up at us. Ask Mr. Drake why it wasn't kind of rusty and dirty after lying around in the brush for a month.
It didn't look as if it had been lying outdoors very long.
No. Now, ask Mr. Drake if he ever owned a gun of that caliber, and if he just happened to have it with him when we were walking through the woods.
Mr. Drake, you didn't...
Miss Wade, there are times when a man in my position has to resort to artifice to achieve an end, such as selling Magnus the idea that we had actually talked to Ethan Lance.
Now, that was a pretty speech, wasn't it? Say, Bart.
What now, Inspector?
How were you so sure that it was Jules Magnus who had knocked off the bait?
Inspector... You mean to say you don't know the answer to that?
Oh, Bart, can't you take a little ribbing?
All right, Inspector, I'll tell you. You see, Magnus knew about the existence of that picture. Ellen showed it to him. Isn't that right, Ellen?
Well, he acted as though he wanted to help me.
Naturally, he would. So when you showed him the picture, he tried to lash you out of doing anything about it. Isn't that true?
Yes. So I decided to come to New York to see you without telling anyone.
Yeah, but what happened when you showed the picture to Magnus by?
Why, I showed it to him upside down, Inspector. Yet he knew the word that was written there. A word that you and I had to look at twice to discern.
Why, that's wonderful. I can't imagine anyone being so clever.
He's got the answer to that, haven't you, Bart?
Yes, I have, Inspector. You see, Ellen, mystery is my hobby.
Personal notice. Danger's my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details. Standard Oil Company of California invites you to Let George Do It. In just a moment, we'll begin tonight's adventure of George Valentine. Did you know that you can be wasting 1 out of every 10 gallons of gasoline you buy due to worn spark plugs? It's true. And dirty worn plugs can also rob your engine of power and pickup. To avoid this waste, let Car Savers check your spark plugs. They'll clean them and reset the gap. Or, if necessary, they'll be glad to install new Atlas Champion spark plugs to give you more get up and go. It takes just a few moments to check the condition of the spark plugs in your car, so stop in soon for a Car Saver spark plug check at any independent Chevron gas station or standard station where they say, and mean, we take better care of your car. And now, tonight's story, Human Nature, a transcribed adventure of George Valentine.
Dear Mr. Valentine, if there's one thing I learned in all the years I lived, it's human nature, especially when it comes to men. You, for instance. I know I don't have to go into a lot of detail, except to say that another man, a very fine man, needs help real bad, and only you can give it to him. Right? Okay, then. I'll meet you tonight here at Club Bim Bam after the last show is over and the people go home. We'll have the club all to ourselves.
And I'll be very, very grateful for your trouble. Yours very truly, Ruby Devlin.
I guess Ruby knows human nature all right, Brooksy. I'll tell you more about it tomorrow. Now, that other
letter. Club Bim Bam, the best-looking chorus in town.
What?
Three sizzling shows a night.
Oh, now you don't think...
I know human nature, too, my friend.
Why, Angel?
Mine. Unless I were right there, I'd worry about you losing your beauty sleep or... Well, just working too hard. So...
Yes, ma'am.
Maybe we came too late, George.
Yeah. Everybody seems to have gone, including Ruby Devlin.
Well, I guess we could ask that cleaning woman over there.
Uh-huh. Oh, I beg your pardon.
Yes, sir.
Oh, we were looking for a lady. I believe she's one of the girls in the floor show.
All gone, mister.
So I see.
We thought she might have left a message or something.
Her name is Ruby Devlin.
I am Ruby Devlin.
What?
Oh, I know I'm not as pretty as those painted hussies, but I didn't mean to scare you, mister.
Oh, well,
I expected you alone, Mr. Valentine, so I...
Well, my assistant, Miss Brooks, is the worrying type.
Yes, that's right.
Well, I'm glad you're along, dearie. Here, let's go and sit down.
Yeah, sure, go.
No, not here. Might as well take the best table in the house. Right near the dance floor.
We have plenty to choose from.
I'm the choosy type. That's why I like this job.
I don't follow.
Here. This one's okay. Well, nobody telling me how I should work. I'm my own boss. And I can make myself feel as good as anybody who comes here. See this thermos bottle of coffee, dearie?
Well, yes.
Every night I put it in a champagne bucket. Like this. High class. And the sandwich I bring from home tastes as good as the one they soak you a buck and a half for. And I can imagine a better floor show than they put on. Oh, it's all in the way you look at things. And I understand human nature.
Which reminds me, Miss Devlin.
Ruby.
Ruby. That letter, it said something about somebody being in real trouble.
That's right. Ben Cullum. As fine a man as you'd want to meet. I worked as cleaning woman for him once, so I ought to know. Us girls can tell best about people.
Well, what sort of trouble is he in?
You wouldn't think a man as sweet and trusting as Ben would be in his sort of business.
What business is that?
He runs a pawn shop on Lower 4th Street.
Oh, no, in that hole? And he's sweet and trusting?
I told you it's hard to believe. But I know human nature, and he is. Besides, he proved it to me. You want to know how, dearie?
I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Well, I had a little ring I was always crazy about. My mother's. And one day I needed some money. So I told Ben Cullum. Well, he was real sweet. Just loan me the money and let me keep the ring, too. $15.
Of course, you were right there working for him.
No, it wasn't that at all. Anyway, I know Mr. Cullen is in trouble now because I heard somebody say he's a fence.
Oh, now there's something a lot more in character with the neighborhood. Who uttered those words of wisdom, Ruby?
Well, it was two nights ago after the club closed. A skinny guy, I think his name is Joey Krieger, was a little drunk and... Oh, nobody pays any attention to a cleaning woman. And he was talking to another guy, and And he said he pulled a heist.
Ah.
And he said he had a real good fence, and he said it was Ben Cullum.
That's something for the police, isn't it?
No, because it's got to be a lie. Oh, I read psychology books all the time and magazines. I got nothing else to do with my time.
And so, Ruby, you're sure Ben's good name has been besmirched?
I think that guy was lying. But if it's true, then it must be the first time, and Mr. Cullen must be in trouble to have to do it.
Well, what can I do?
Find out if this man Krieger was telling the truth and stop Ben Cullen from getting into real trouble.
Well, that's quite an assignment.
Oh, I've got to help. I never forget a favor. You won't turn me down, will you, Mr. Valentine?
No. No, I guess I'm a little curious about human nature myself, Ruby. And especially about a sweet, trusting man running a 4th Street hawk shop.
My clerk told you this room was private, Mr. Valentine?
Yeah, Mr. Cullum. And I told him I had to talk to you, not to him.
Well, you excuse the appearance of the room, miss. As you see, I live here and transact business up front.
It saves car fare.
Saves trouble. Besides, I'm a bachelor. This does fine for me. Now, about your business, Mr. Valentine?
Well, as I told you, Miss Devlin thinks you're in trouble. And because you're in trouble, you might be tempted to turn crooked and fence some good.
Yeah, I did Ruby a favor once. Now I'm sorry. She's imagining things.
Mm-hmm. A big, cheap safe in the front, but a real fancy one back here. And so many bars on the windows, you'd think this was Fort Knox.
I have valuable things.
Yes, the window in the front is full of them. Ukuleles and secondhand cameras.
Well, I'm a poor man. I worry about the things I have.
Uh-huh. And about this Joey Krieger character.
Yeah. There's your answer. I couldn't have timed it better. That's one of the things I like, miss, and I would never want to lose. My cuckoo clock.
The cuckoo's off pitch.
And so is Ruby Devlin. So now get out, both of you.
Sure, Buster, sure.
Hey, Jimmy, come here.
Yes, Mr. Cullum.
You show these people out. And if ever they want to pawn anything here, it's no go. Understand?
Yes, sir.
You know something, Mr. Cullum? You're making me more and more curious. So long.
Not in my department, Valentine, but I checked.
Thanks, Johnson.
What's the verdict, Lieutenant?
The boys in robbery have had their eyes on Cullum for a long time. He's much too slick. They've never found any evidence against him.
Maybe this is their lucky break.
Just because some cleaning woman heard a drunk blab about fencing some goods?
Did you ask the robbery squad if his Joey Krieger character was involved in any cute stunts lately?
No, Soap. He's a specialist in his kind of work. That particular kind of robbery's been conspicuous by its absence.
Oh, Joey could have changed his style of work just for laughs.
I told you he's a specialist and proud of it. Guys like that stay in the groove.
Uh-huh.
Well, George, there isn't much we can do. As long as the police already have their eye on Mr. Cullum, and apparently he isn't a sweet, innocent man being forced into a life of crime, as Ruby seems to think he...
Excuse me. Yeah? Okay, put him on. Sergeant Lay in the robbery squad.
No?
Yeah, Lay, I... What? Well, you did. When? I see. You couldn't, huh? Sure, sure, okay. Okay, thanks.
Anything new?
Yeah, Sergeant Lay was out to lunch, and the other guy I spoke to just didn't know.
That there was a Joey Krieger type of robbery? Is that it, Lieutenant?
Over $5,000 worth of jewelry. They brought Joey in, but couldn't get anywhere with him. And believe me, they tried.
And there is something to what Ruby told us.
I'm afraid so.
As long as Sergeant Lay and his playmates have already talked to Joey Krieger, could you get me his address, Johnson?
I guess so.
I'd like to talk to him.
Sure, but I know the kind. He'll say nothing.
Oh, I got no secrets, Valentine. I like to talk.
Johnson's no good as a judge of human nature, either.
Talk and say nothing, eh, Joey?
You know, your friend's got a suspicious nature, miss. That's no good for a guy. He eats you up from the inside, you know. You should ought to have a talk with him.
At the moment, he prefers conversation with you.
Yeah. Okay. Waltz me around again, Matilda. I had nothing to do with that heist. I don't know no Ben Cullum, and I'm liable to say anything when I'm drinking.
The waltz is over. Come on, Brooksy. It's getting late.
Okay. Have some respect for the hour. Hello.
Come on, Valentine. Rise and shine.
Oh, Johnson, it's only a little after six. Your energy is almost indecent. Call me later, will you?
If I can be up, so can you. Especially in this case.
What are you talking about?
I'm on my way to Cullum's pawn shop, friend, to check up on Ben Cullum's murder.
Somebody made him open that fancy safe, then made sure Cullum would never tell us who it was.
Yeah, easy enough to tell what Cullum's last thought must have been, the way his hand's still reaching for that empty safe.
Yeah. Hey, this other clerk, the one who called the police.
Chick Brunell. Sergeant Malloy's got him up front until we're ready for him.
Uh-huh. You know what bothers me most, Johnson, is I'll be darned if I see any way the murderer could have come in here.
He was here. Look. Exhibit A. As big as life. I mean death.
But you saw the alarm. It works from a switch right near the door from the street.
As fine an alarm as money can buy?
Yeah. To protect not the junk in the store, but whatever was here in the safe.
A great alarm. But it didn't do Cullum any good.
Now, if the wires were cut, if anybody even went fooling with the lock, the protective service gang would have been here.
Well, it's a cinch no one could have come in from the back. Look at the bars on those windows.
I noticed them before.
Cullum must have been in bed up to the very minute they come in on him. Heard he had something on besides that nightshirt.
That's right.
See his slippers there at the foot of the bed? Didn't even have time to get into them.
Eight.
What?
Eight. That bird said cuckoo eight times.
Good. You can count.
It's only 7:20.
So what? All those fancy clocks go cockeyed after a while?
Yeah, I guess so. I still wish I knew how the murderer got in here. There must be an answer to that.
Yeah, there's only one explanation. Cullum must have made a date for somebody to come when there wouldn't be any clerk around for a witness. And whoever that was is the guy we want.
Uh-uh.
It's easy enough to dope out. Cullum was in a big deal in Hot Stones. Maybe there was an argument about the price. Stop saying that.
That's a good theory, but it won't work.
Why?
Well, you yourself pointed out Cullum's bare feet. Wouldn't he have had more than a nightshirt on if he was letting in company?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he would.
No, Jensen, I'm afraid this is a mystery that will take a lot of solving.
In just a moment, we'll return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine. If you're like most motorists here in the West, you use heavy-duty RPM motor oil in your car. So I'm sure that you'll be interested in these outstanding performance records turned in by heavy-duty RPM. One taxicab fleet, for instance, used to average only 35,000 miles between overhauls. Now, using heavy-duty RPM, these same cabs travel 100,000 miles between overhauls. Heavy-duty RPM cut engine wear and greatly increased the time between overhauls. In another case, heavy-duty RPM motor oil in a fleet of cabs reduced engine wear 71%. And so it goes. Case after case shows that heavy-duty RPM motor oil not only gives protection against gum, acid, and corrosion, it actually cuts engine wear and keeps oil consumption way down. And what motorist doesn't want this added protection for his engine? No wonder more and more Western drivers are joining those who use only heavy-duty RPM. So if you're not already enjoying its extra benefits, better switch over soon. Give your motor a fresh start in life by stopping in tomorrow for an oil drain and change to heavy-duty RPM motor oil. It's just one more reason why the folks at Standard Stations and independent Chevron gas stations say and mean, we take better care of your car. When a man is murdered in a room that's guarded by stout bars at the windows and a very efficient burglar alarm at the door, you really have a mystery. Especially when the murder is complicated by such hard-to-explain things as a cuckoo clock that keeps atrocious time, a cleaning woman who spends her time reading psychology books, and a specialist in the field of robbery who talks too much when he's been drinking. Even if your name is George Valentine, you find this combination of factors, shall we say, challenging?
Let me get this straight, Grinnell. You walked in, found Mr. Collins' body in that back bedroom, and called the police.
That's right, Mr. Valentine.
And you got here about 5 minutes to 6?
Cold and nasty this morning, too.
Wasn't that kind of early for a pawnbroker's clerk to be coming to work?
Well, Mr. Cullum paid us well, so we worked the way he wanted us to. And didn't ask any questions.
We?
Kibby and I.
Oh, yeah. I met him yesterday.
You see, we changed our shifts around twice a month.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
This is a day and night pawn shop. It's right for the neighborhood. Open from 7 a.m. till midnight. Well, today, like always, I was supposed to come at 6, sweep up the store and move the trays out of that big safe, and then I'd work till 6 at night.
And Kibby?
Then he comes in at noon, closes at midnight.
Real long hours.
You're telling me.
Anyway, then, it's only from midnight until 6 that Cullum was always alone here. And that's when he'd have that burglar alarm set, huh?
Right. The last thing at night, he'd turn it on. First thing in the morning, he turned it off.
Mm-hmm. 6 hours a night. Not too much, is it? Cullum must have done some of his sleeping in the daytime, huh?
No, he'd go in and lie down every evening at 9 o'clock. Sort of had himself trained. He'd sleep from 9 until 12.
I see.
Then the last thing before he went home, the night man would call him. The boss would get up and come here to this curtain in his slippers, and after the clerk had gone out, Mr. Cullum would reach around the partition like this and put on the switch.
Mm-hmm. I don't suppose that he ever forgot.
With maybe $40,000 or $50,000 in that little safe inside there, would you forget?
$40,000 or $50,000?
Well, of course, I was just guessing.
Oh. I suppose you don't know anything about any business that was done back there.
How would I? Sometimes people would come in and ask for Mr. Cullum personally, and then we'd call him.
And Mr. Cullum would take them in the back?
Sure. Nobody but Mr. Cullum had the combination to the little safe.
Well, I'll get the report from the medical examiner, Valentine.
Oh, good, good. What's the story, Johnson?
He put the time of Cullum's death at 5 o'clock this morning. Half hour one way or the other, but not more. He's positive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't get here until 5 minutes to 6, and the alarm was turned off, so you see, I didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah, sure. It's a mystery, all right. A dead man turns off the alarm. And for the time being, all we can do is wait.
Wait!
Sure, Johnson. I sent Miss Brooks to get Ruby Devlin. Sergeant Malloy is out rounding up Joey Krieger and the night clerk, Kibby. There's one thing I don't think you noticed, though, Johnson.
Huh?
The clock here in the store. Look at it. Like the cuckoo clock, it too is 40 minutes fast.
I know human nature. Mr. Cullum was a sweet, gentle man. Now he's dead.
Yes, Miss Devlin, and we're trying to find out who killed him.
You thought you might be able to help us. You want to, don't you?
Well, yes, anything I can do, Mr. Valentine.
All right. You used to work here at the pawn shop.
Almost a year ago.
Well, now it's just a hunch, but do you notice anything different about the store?
No.
Please, Ruby, look around carefully. You must be sure.
Everything's the same, Miss Brooks, just like everything's the same back there.
Oh, great.
Well, I really didn't know what I expected.
The phone.
What's that?
The phone. It used to be connected way over there, near the hall. So it'd be near the store in the bedroom.
And now it's been moved close to the front door.
So what?
You asked me to tell you what's different, Lieutenant. I told
Grinnell,
you.
Grinnell, can we see you a minute?
Sure, Mr. Valentine.
Well, this telephone. It was moved recently, wasn't it?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Why?
Kibby. His feet bother him, so he asked Mr. Cullum to save him steps. Kibby and I always had to stand near the door.
Oh.
Like I said, Mr. Cullum was a nice, considerate man.
Kibby sold him a bill of goods. Told him that when he had to go away from the door to answer the phone, somebody from the street might swipe something and run.
Young man?
Never mind.
What do we do now, George?
Well, it's beginning to sound like a refrain, Brooksy, but we wait.
Excited? What am I supposed to do? Have hysterics?
No, nothing as violent as that, Kibby.
Of course, I knew something must be wrong when the cop came and asked me to come here to the store.
Could have been a robbery or something.
It could have. But you were here with this gentleman yesterday, miss.
Yes.
You saw how violent Mr. Cullum could be, didn't you?
Well,
besides, he was mixed up with some pretty hard people.
You knew he was operating as a fence?
Now, don't get me wrong, Lieutenant. I wasn't in on any of that stuff myself.
Curious the thought.
But you can't work for 2 years for a man in this business without, well, without getting a pretty good idea what's going on. Maybe it's just a guess now, see, but maybe Mr. Cullum double-crossed one of his customers and...
That was the first thing we thought of, but it's no go.
No.
Hey, Kibby.
Yes?
You know, it's funny that the burglar alarm didn't work, wasn't it?
Yes, that is funny.
You saw Mr. Cullum turn on the switch when you left last night at midnight, didn't you?
Sure, like always.
Oh, how could you see it? He closed the door after you.
The door closes behind me with a snap lock, miss. And when Mr. Cullum hears it click, I see his arm coming through the curtain. The nightlight I leave on in the store is right over the burglar alarm switch and shows me that it's closed.
Oh, yeah. So the mystery gets darker and darker.
All right, Kibby, thanks a lot. Wait out there with the sergeant.
Anything you say, Lieutenant.
What do we do now, Valentine? Wait some more?
No. Now we go to work.
Hallelujah.
There's a desk in Cullum's bedroom, not far from the safe. There's something in that desk I want.
A blank envelope.
Uh-huh. That's a part of it.
What can that do?
A world of good, I hope. Now I need something with Cullum's writing on it. Yeah, here we are.
Valentine, if you don't tell
me
what
you... Take it easy, Johnson. I want you to send two clerks, Miss Devlin and Joey Krieger, inside. While you and Brooksy stay outside with your ear glued to the keyhole.
An uncomfortable position if I ever heard one.
Cut out the horseplay, Valentine. Tell me what you're
going to
do.
I'm going to write a single word in what I hope will pass for Cullum's handwriting. All right, folks. All right. Quiet, please. I know this may sound like a dirty trick, but what Lieutenant Johnson and I didn't tell you people is that Mr. Cullum didn't die immediately. No, that's right. He was able to reach a pencil and a piece of paper and put down a name, a single name.
Oh, it must be the murderer.
Yes, yeah. Who was it?
Do you know why we didn't mention it before, Joey?
Huh? You got me, bud.
Are you, Grinnell?
I wouldn't know, Mr. Valentine.
We didn't because it really was no proof. Mr. Cullum might have been writing a message to the person whose name we have, and not about him, accusing him. But now we have additional proof.
Who was it? I'm your client, Mr. Valentine. You've got to tell me.
Yeah, Ruby, I think I do. The name is Grinnell.
Oh,
me?
Oh, here, look for yourself. You know Mr. Cullum's handwriting. Of course, it's a little shaky. He was dying.
I don't know why you should write my name. I tell you, I don't know. Well, don't look at me like that. What's the matter with all of you?
Tell me, Grinnell. Don't you have any idea of how a fella could beat that burglar alarm of Cullum's?
No.
All right, suppose I tell you. You just see how closely we check.
No.
I work for Ben Cullum, and it burns me up that I've got to handle his money all day long with never a chance of a dollar of it sticking to my hands. What I could grab and run with wouldn't be worth it.
You're wrong.
Hey,
I never...
leave him talk, punk.
Kibby, you know I wouldn't do anything...
Oh, shut up.
Go ahead, Mr. Valentine.
I keep thinking about that other safe that Cullum keeps back in his bedroom. 40 or 50,000 in it. You said so yourself, remember, Grinnell?
Yeah, but I was just talking...
I don't dare pull anything while I'm on duty. If I fake a stick-up, the cops are too likely to smell an inside job. Sure, I can have a key made, but that doesn't mean a thing. The burglar alarm. That's the problem to lick.
Yeah. So what do you do, Valentine, huh? What do you do?
I get an idea, see? Foolproof. It's last night, 9:00. Cullum turns in. I'm left alone in the store. When I go back to wake him up, I've already pulled my little stunt. I've set the cuckoo clock in his bedroom and the other one in the store 40 minutes ahead.
I was here last night, not Grinnell.
Cullum lets me out and throws the switch. Then, a few minutes after 5 in the morning, I go into a booth and call the store. Keep ringing until Cullum gets up and answers.
Last night, I was here.
I disguise my voice and tell Cullum it's a wrong number. He swears at me and looks at the clock. It's 40 minutes fast, so he thinks there's only a couple of minutes left before he has to get up and turn off the alarm anyway. He's only human. Remember the phrase, Ruby?
Yes.
He doesn't like the idea of getting up in the cold again. It's a raw, nasty morning. Why wait for Grinnell? Cullum figures he'll turn the switch off now.
Shut up!
The phone was conveniently located now, wasn't it, Kibby? From where he stood, Cullum could reach the burglar alarm switch. And after he did, you saw him through the door, and you came in and made him open the safe, and then...
And killed him, yes. I'm going to kill you.
Mr. Valentine, look out!
I'm going to kill you!
Oh, John! Oh, dang, are you all right?
Yeah, but a kibby, isn't he?
He'll live. I got him in the arm. He'll die, but not from my bullet.
Yeah. You see, he did something very human, too. He forgot to set those two clocks back to the right time.
Which one of these gasoline qualities do you think your car would do without? Full power, quick starting, fast warm-up, area blending, vapor lock prevention, anti-knock, smooth acceleration, or economy mileage? Right. Your car needs all of these qualities. And unlike a one-feature gas, Chevron Supreme Gasoline gives you all eight high-performance qualities in correct balance. So for better all-around performance from your car, stop in soon and fill up with Chevron Supreme Gasoline at any standard station or independent Chevron gas station where they say and mean we take better care of your car.
I understand why it had to be one of the two clerks, George, but why were you sure it was Kibby?
Well, Grinnell left for home at 6, Angel. He couldn't have set the two clocks back then. Cullum would have caught wise long before morning.
While Kibby left at midnight, when Cullum was already half asleep, sure.
And there was that business of changing the place where the telephone was connected.
Mm-hmm, that too.
But, George, if you suspected Kibby, why did you accuse Grinnell?
Human nature, eh, Ruby?
What?
It's only human to let your guard drop when you think it's somebody else who's in danger.
I'm a fine judge of human nature, I am. Ben Cullum, he's been crooked for years.
The police couldn't get wise to him either, Ruby, so don't blame yourself too much.
Besides, it's a lot easier to predict what people will do than what they are.
Hmm?
Kibby knew what Cullum would do. You knew what Kibby would do. I know what you're going to do too, darling.
You do?
When I really set my mind to it, you're going to marry me. Want a bet?
Tonight's transcribed adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations throughout the West. Robert Bailey is starred as George with Virginia Gregg as Brooksy. Let George Do It was written by David Victor and directed by Kenneth Webb. Ken Christie was heard as Lieutenant Johnson, Noreen Gamil as Ruby, Larry Dobkin as Joey, Harry Bartell as Grinnell, and Griff Barnett as Kibby. Music by Gaylord Carter. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. Let George Do It is heard overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.